Welcome, everyone. Thank you for attending, especially after lunch session. Today's session is about healthy teams, strong business, creating a resilient workforce. I'm Sarah Myers. I'm the VP of Operations at the Park City Chamber of Commerce. I'm honored to be here with four of my peers in various roles in HR throughout our community. I am going to let them introduce themselves briefly, but first I want to give you some insight into the format that we're going to do today. I wanted to mix it up a little bit, so we'll do intros, and then we have four sections that are broken out by the description that you read for this session. In each of those, there'll be about 15 minutes. I'll ask a few questions of the panelists, but then I'd like to open it up for Q&A specifically about that topic, so that way we don't wait till the end. You don't have to think about, hold on to your question until the end and try and remember it, so you can really be engaged. So first, I'm going to let Jill.
You should.
Hello?
There it is. Hi, I'm Jill Schroyer with Expedition HR. I own an HR consulting company based here in Park City, and we are the tough conversation experts, kind of the Netflix of HR. We help clients on this subscription model, and we love helping organizations with those hard conversations. Been in HR for about 25 years in workplaces and had my business for 8 years, and so I've seen a lot of clients and a lot of situations, and so I just hope I can bring you some value today.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jackie Odragna, and I am the Vice President of Human Resources over at the Stein Collection. I have pretty much only been in hospitality for my 30-plus year career that I've had so far. And I have been here in town in Park City for the last 12. So I've seen a lot of growth, a lot of change, a lot of new things, a few crises, right? The way we've changed. So I'm excited to talk about resilience as we get into today.
I was not planning on standing, but I have to keep the trend going. Hello, everyone. My name is Patricia Akias. I serve as the Director of Human Resources of Park City. We are a humanitarian center. We have thrift stores. When people donate or purchase clothing or other items from our stores, in keeping with today's theme, they are, I guess, contributing to a greater cause. And we also have counseling centers, thrift stores, and other programs throughout the year that are helping people meet their basic needs. And so we say that we work to transform lives, to meet people where they are as an expression of God's love. I do also have a little bit of background in hospitality, immigration, and I'm really happy to be here today.
Hi, I'm Sarah Mangano. I'm the HR director for Park City Municipal. But I will do that. So I've been with the city for about 4 years, working with everyone who serves our community. So we're really kind of the engine behind our city. Prior to that, I came from a variety of different backgrounds in HR. I've worked in Fortune 25 startup, turnaround, all sorts of fun things. But what I really love doing is building a culture unique to that organization, helping senior leadership find a voice that speaks to them, and building the business around them and what supports that organization. So really excited to talk to you here today. Love questions and have fun. Please laugh today. We're not HR and scary.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. So part one, we're going to talk about what does a resilient workforce mean to you? So we'll start with Jill, since she has the microphone.
I guess so.
In what sentence, what does a resilient workforce mean to you or your organizations that you work with?
One sentence?
Yep.
Beforehand. Yes. And I put together some notes because, I want to make sure I bring as much value as I can. So I believe that resilience means that organizations, you guessed it, don't shy away from hard conversations and believe that those hard conversations can make you stronger instead of break you down.
I said the same thing, one sentence, but we'll try our best here. I think that resilience and having a resilient workforce is really about being adaptable. As I said earlier, if we're nothing, we're change. I can't even imagine what is going to change in the next few years, especially as AI is coming out and jobs are changing, and how do we help our teams, our workforce adapt to it? But it's also really about communication on of all levels, whether it's tough or not, being honest and definitely working together. Supporting each other is super important. And when I was thinking about this question, I was thinking about being back here in the Wasatch back and how we work together as a community is really critical, but also so special about what we do here.
Beautifully said. I would add to that a team who keeps showing up through challenges because they feel supported, valued, connected to the work that they do, but most importantly, connected to each other. Because then they are equipped to adapt through challenges while still showing up for each other and the people they serve with consistency, compassion, and integrity.
Thank you. So I'm going to go a little bit different direction. And when I look at resiliency, it's having the right people at the right place at the right time. And I think part of this starts with our job descriptions and really being honest about what the work is. And I'll give you a very short story, one sentence and a story, right? Okay. So with the story is when I first came to Park City Municipal, we were hiring for transit operators for our winter season. This is 22-23, so just you know what that was all about. We had a lovely woman from Florida come and interview with us, and she was fabulous, just such a delight to speak to, really customer-focused. But we forgot to ask her one key thing. Have you ever driven in snow or in the mountains? Turns out she was petrified when she got here. Not resilient, did not work out for her. But what the learning was these are things we need to ask for. These are things we need to ask about. And by having people who understand the expectations of the work, they're able to dig in. They know what they're expected to do. And we hire the resiliency first, not last. We don't build it, we hire it.
Why don't you keep the mic? We'll start from down there. So what would you say is the single biggest workforce? Okay, you can do more than one. I guess singularity. Okay, what's one of the biggest workforce challenges unique to the Wasatch Back?
So I'm going to say talent pool. As Park City continues to develop, we are building more and more second homes. We're having more and more retirees come in and finding talent for the unique jobs of our resorts, our community, our businesses, it gets harder and harder. And I'm not gonna stay the other thing that's the biggest challenge, I'll let someone else grab that, but I really feel like that talent pool and how do we source it, build it, or get it is really a huge challenge for us.
Earlier today, our keynote speaker, Natalie, she talked about the Magnificent Seven, sorry. English is like my fourth language. the Utah Magnificent Seven. So she talked about economic dynamic and diversity, high household income. I was actually surprised. I was telling Jackie earlier that we have the lowest poverty rate in the United States, which is very encouraging, really encouraging data. Well-trained and educated workforce and so on, many beautiful other things that she said. So it shows that we have a really strong pipeline, really strong foundation for a resilient workforce, a strong workforce. However, to build on what you said, it's attracting that talent pool, but a lot of the talents, they can't afford to live in the zip code. And not to get too nerdy, I did pull up a lot of data, but 33 house price to income is 33 times. And nonprofit, speaking for myself, there's the gap, nonprofit versus for-profit, which is 16%. And so looking at all the turnover rate within my sector, turnover rate is between 30 and 40%. So it makes it really hard. The truth is the people who are trained and have the passion and the motivation to show up to work, they simply can't afford to live here. And to me, I believe that that's one of the biggest challenges that we have here.
I would agree, and I can expand on that even a little bit more, is that, as Patricia said, they cannot afford to live here. So affordable housing is an issue, and we all know this. We've been talking about this at least the 12 years that I've been here, right? We've come a long way, I will say that. From the time that I stepped foot here till today and building more housing for the workforce has come a long way. I think that one of the gaps, though, is accounting for families. Slopeside Village was tremendous. I have less issues having housing for seasonal workers that come every year. But they're living in shared living. These are adults serving adults living in shared living, and that's not always appropriate or what our workforce is looking for. So we do attract a lot of people that come from the outside. I don't even know by a show of hands how many people are transplants here themselves, but I'm sure it is the majority. We don't have an attraction problem because it is such a great place, but we do have a situation where we're not able to provide for people long-term because they might come here, start a job, love it, but then realize they want to grow and they want to have a family and they want to do all those things. So unfortunately, now I feel like Natalie saying, what's the great news you have, right? I think that's an area where we have to continue to grow and push and continue to do things. Because on top of that, when our talent come from outside of the county or the area, now they have to drive. And I don't know, I didn't look at gas today, but what are we at, $4.59, right? So might even be $5, I don't know, by this point, right? So all the things that go off of that, right, is traffic, is transit, and I'm very, very hopeful as to what's going on with transit right now. So I can't wait to see what's going to happen there.
I'm okay moving to Q&A on this one. I mean, you've shared some great things. Do you want to move to Q&A?
We can, or we can also, I was going to ask you guys a follow-up question. So when you're looking at some of the obstacles that your employees are facing, have you been able to implement any benefits or programs to directly address those?
I'm very proud to work for the Stein Collection because we run a mini hotel in housing. We do have about 210 to 20 beds per year that we do support and subsidize for our team members. Again, it's not always optimal. As you can all guess, it is definitely easier in the summer to have a lot of flexibility when it comes to our housing than it is in the winter, where we do fill every bed. I'm going to do a little plug right now because also in the thought of thinking about the future and families, and this is a hot topic for me, I had a conversation over the last couple of days about child care credits with Becca from the Chamber, and I'm excited to start to look at what that looks like as well because, again, I think this affordability for families is multi-piece, right? It's not just housing. It's child care, as we know, is at a premium, and it's hard for working families to be able to make it. So more to come.
Sarah, you shared a story about a prospective candidate. She didn't have experience driving in the snow. And I guess at the Christian Center, one of the things that we try to do is offering remote work to the people who are actually able to work remote. Because if you're frontline, for example, you work in the store, it'll be really hard to ring a customer from home. But we try to offer flexible schedule, flexible work option, but at the same time, we completely change the schedule around winter time. And you talked about the gas price, long commutes, and according to the data, that's about 30% tax on the dollar that we make as workers who have to drive 60 minutes up and down. So that's about 2 hours every day to go to work. So having, as employer, having that opportunity to offer the work from home for some of our workers is just one of the things that we do. And I'm interested to hear what else, like, I don't know if we have employers here, what else are you guys doing to help people with this crisis. And another thing that we do, I think I'm taking more time than I'm allowed. We have, so there's this overgoing conversation about a parking program that we have. So colorful backstory, we have about 100 people, so 99 employees and 99 employees and a few contractors, and we only have 12 parking spots. So so we're having to try to go to businesses who are actually really gracious, and they allow our employees to park there, but we also offer gift cards to help with gas. And unfortunately, we can't do it for all our campuses, but for the campuses that have very little parking spots, we do try to offer just some kind of support to help with the cost of living with the gas price, which is probably $6 by the time you set that.
So at the city, we're very lucky in a couple different ways. One, we do have a similar to Jackie, but not as robust a housing situation, where we've been able to provide housing of multiple sizes. So we have a lot of studios, but we also have some 2 and 3 bedroom properties, which do house families, and that's really great. We also have some tiny homes we acquired about 2 years ago, which are wonderful for some of our seasonal workers and different and people in different stages of their lives. So not only do we provide these for seasonal workers, we also provide them to employees in transition. So sometimes people might, you know, have a divorce or be building a home or be in transition of homes, lots of different things. And so we're recruitment, they're coming in from out of town, so we're able to do that. The other thing we do is we have a really robust education program, education reimbursement. So we offer up to $10,000 a year in education reimbursement for people pursuing degrees. So we've been able to support people in getting master's, bachelor's, some people gain their AAs, and then other specialized certification like CPAs and other things that we need to have the municipality run. So that's also been a great way for us to help grow our talent and get people from entry-level jobs into mid-level and senior positions.
Thank you. Would anyone like to share a unique either obstacle or benefit that you've been a part of, you're able to implement? No? Okay. Well, then we'll keep going along. So part two is about burnout and well-being. Let's start with Sarah. Well, no, Jackie. Jackie's got this question. What are the early warning signs of burnout that managers often miss? And how do you train supervisors to catch them?
So being in hospitality, we're humans dealing with humans every single day. And the more you deal with others, the more you get to recognize what those signs are. We sort of have a saying in hospitality that if you ask a guest how everything is, how their stay is, and if they say fine, shaking heads, excellent, resonated, okay, right? It means nothing is fine, right? And so, but that is the everything is fine, now move along, because I really don't want to talk about what is going on. And I think that, you know, we in Park City, in the East Village, in Heber, right? We have so many things that happen. We have highs and lows of business, right? We have weather, we have traffic, we have festivals. We don't have it anymore, so I won't say anything else, but right? We have times that we know are gonna be more stressful than others for our team members. I always joke that I think that December 27th is the worst day of the year because that's when it takes you 3 hours to get home, right? Everything seems to happen on that day. So I think that looking out for that is important to think about what is going on. But I also, I think I'm so grateful that I work for a team that recognizes these signs every day. We have a very simple but effective slogan that we just take care of our people. And that's our guests, our owners, that's our team members every single day. And if we just keep focused on that and we recognize the signs that our people need a little extra help, and it could be as simple as having them go to lunch or go for a walk, regardless, you know, depending on what the season is, and just to supporting our people on all levels, I think that really is helpful.
I love this topic. So I'm going to say something or ask a question. If you're willing to maybe raise of hands, who believes in like just the idea of that energy is in a space? Well, believe it or not, it's a real thing. They've studied it in like physics, and like there is a real thing. Everyone brings around energy. And so one thing I want to talk about when it comes to burnout that I think is often overlooked is what energy. Like when you sense, all it is sensing something. Somebody is off, don't ignore that. And I like to say burnout's about a small deviation. They're not gonna just start calling out sick, and they're not gonna just make a ton of mistakes. They're just gonna kind of be off. And it is your job to notice that. And my favorite expression, just three words. Anyone know what it is when you sense something? Bingo. Hey, just want to check in. Are you okay? And they might be like, yeah, fine, why? And then you just go on with your day, and they might break down in tears. And then you open up the space for just a conversation. They say, I'm just struggling. I love talking about psychological safety, and actually back to the resilience question. I think resilient workforce is a psychologically safe workforce. You know, it doesn't mean the lights are going to fall. It means that they feel good at work. And so kind of become better readers of energy. And it's funny, when you just kind of focus on like, is this person coming how they normally do? You might start noticing this. So that's what I wanted to share about burnout.
Go ahead, Patricia.
To piggyback on both of what you ladies have said, starting with hospitality, working for the Marriott, I remember three tips that we always had to do regardless of your position. Administration, back of the house, front of the house. When you see the guest, make eye contact, respond to their cues, and then make it brilliant. So whatever cues that you respond to, make it brilliant. I feel like we could flex all of that into the workforce and everything that we do. Energy, we see something, we feel something, even when they're not saying. And I'm gonna take it even further back. I find that the first sign of burnout, at times, it probably doesn't necessarily start with the team member. It starts with us leaders. It starts with a leader. Because when we're going through something and we have that energy and we have that influence over people, and the people that we are leading, a lot of times they are the product of the influence that we have on them. So we can't talk about burnout without mentioning compassion fatigue. And for a lot of us who are in service industry, frontline, whatever role that you have, if you're serving customers, if you are interacting with people, I mean, we're all people. We're awesome, but we could also be tiring sometimes. But so compassion fatigue, especially as leaders, we are, if you have 30 people, 10 people reporting to you, then you start really getting tired of being compassionate, of asking, are you okay? And you are absorbing all of that trauma. And if you fail to take care of yourself, and then you start, all of that energy starts influencing the way that your team, they perform, or even their mood. So I find that at times, burnout starts with us, and then maybe what's happening at home with them, but a lot of times it can also start with us. So I would say for my takeaway from this, one of the things that I really wanted to share is let's take care of ourselves. Let's take care of ourselves because we never know what someone could be going through. Taking care of ourselves could be the only way that we're actually able to take care of other people, and being proactive and preventing burnout in our team. And also it'll enable us to be sharp and being able to truly identify the first signs of burnout. Because if we are so deep and whatever we're going through, we might miss all the first signs where we can't be proactive anymore. We can't ask, are you okay? And where it lands with a conversation with one of the four of us or five of us. And that's what no one else wants. So let's take care of ourselves because the impact that we have on our team, it matters.
Before we move on to the next question, I think a common thread amongst you all is the idea of seeing one another, so seeing your employees. And if I remember correctly, and you're still doing it, Steins had Steins Bucks. And as a manager, like, I don't know, could we give them to each other? You couldn't give them to yourself, I know that. So as for I tried. No, I'm just kidding. We had it with his head on it. I might still have some. No, it used to be Stein Erickson himself. Yeah. So you carried these around as a manager, and if you saw someone doing something, some excellent work, it had to be a little bit beyond their own, like, they did their job. It was, like, a little bit above and beyond, which obviously makes sense at a 5-star hotel. But you got to say, like, I noticed someone do this, like, maybe do something outside their job or this or that, and they could get days off, spa treatments, merch, brunch. So, like, that monetarily does cost you something, correct? But in the grand scheme of it, doesn't really cost you that much. Because then you're like, and you're allowing each other to look out. You don't have to be the CEO. You don't have to be a VP to, like, give that type of recognition to one another. So you just all made me think of that one. Sarah, we're going to move on to you for the next question. So seasonal economies create a feast or famine work cycle. How do you help employees mentally and physically recover between peak seasons without losing them to other employers?
Well, I mean, this is always a challenge, right? And I'll go back to that beautiful winter we had, 22, 23. One of our big groups of seasonal employees are snow removal folks. So we had plow drivers, we had people who would shovel all, I think it's like something like 97 staircases in Park City by hand. Let me tell you, by the end of the season, arms of steel here, but we did a lot for those folks because they did a lot for us. And it wasn't all huge dollars, but we did things like hot cocoa parties where we'd drive out hot chocolate to the people shoveling those stairs, coffee, you know. We also did chair massages. We got a local chiropractic office to come in, and at the end of the shifts, they'd get chair massages. I mean, these were folks who deserved it. Was it a monetary cost? Absolutely. But we really wanted to let people know, and I think, Sarah, you just touched on this, we see you. People don't always say thank you to those folks. They don't always recognize what happens. They notice when a plow driver clips a windshield or a mirror, they notice that right away, but they don't appreciate, hey, I've been out since 3 a.m. in the middle of a storm doing this. So finding them and seeing where they are. Similar to Steinbucks, we have a program called Kudos, so we make sure all our seasonal and part-time employees are able to do that. It's an app with recognition that gets turned in for money. You don't even have to give money. It's just that act of recognition that the whole city gets to see. That was something we really felt was important, is that it's visible to all staff and everyone can see it and comment on it. And then we do dangle the easy carrot. We also give a seasonal bonus if you stay. So, I mean, I will say there's times where, you know, there is a time to throw money at it. And we do that. And then we also make sure we check in with them off season, especially our summer camp counselors, those folks going to high school and college. So they come back season after season. We make sure we touch in with them when they're back at school, say hi, make sure they know we're thinking about them.
Wonderful. Does anyone have any questions or comments about the burnout and well-being of your employees? Okay. Yes. I'm going to give you this just because KPCW is recording.
You had mentioned, Patricia, about the make it brilliant. But I don't know what that means. So what does that mean?
Make it brilliant. So earlier, Jackie, and you feel free to chime in on that. I left hospitality about 5 years ago. But making it brilliant means not only hearing I am fine, but truly making sure that they have a brilliant experience with the hotel. Not a fine, not a decent experience, but truly something that is brilliant, that goes above and beyond to the point where they really do want to come back. Because when I go to a restaurant, or let's say any of us, we go to a restaurant, if it's just decent, then next time we're probably gonna scroll through. But if it was truly brilliant, then it stays with us. And whenever someone asks us, hey, what did you do this weekend? Or, hey, do you know a good restaurant? That's the first thing that's going to pop in mind. So truly, really do something for the guest or for the employee where we truly meet them where they are or even beyond what they were imagining, so that not only their stay could be brilliant, but the experience and the feeling that they have beyond their experience with us is still something that's brilliant in their mind.
I know at Vail they have a program called Surprise and Delight, where it's typically in the marketing department, but if someone notices someone needing assistance during a day, break a boot, break a ski, really need a ski lesson to get down the hill, or you're posting something cool on social, like it's your birthday or whatever, you have up to a certain amount of monetary, like mountain money, if you've ever, anyway, internal money that you could send a drink, not a drink, an appetizer to the Umbrella Bar for someone to enjoy, saying, hey, I saw you celebrating your birthday, something like that. If you can tell, I was one of the people who got to do that. And it's incredibly empowering to get to make that difference in your guest or your client's life. And it makes, ironically, the employee feel better. You're like, yeah, I did that. Or like, I got you down the hill, or I got you new rentals for free. So that's something that doesn't cost a little, but maybe not too much. Jill, did you want to chime in?
Well, I was going to add something. I love that make it brilliant. Like, are you fine? I used to have a friend, and I asked her how she is. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. And I was like, you're not fine at all. And so if you want to get a little more granular, too, about like where I interpret the make it brilliant phrase with your employees, costs you nothing. And it's called empathy. And I'm going to share a technique with you, and some of you might be saying, oh, yeah, I've got an oversharer. If I ask them, I'm not going to ask them, are you okay? Because I'm going to get the 20-minute. Anyone ever experienced this? Everyone ever worked with an oversharer? So I'm going to give you a technique that you can make their experience brilliant. So say they come in, I'm going to use a generic example, oh, traffic was horrible, and you want to get going on your agenda in your meeting, and they're like, the traffic is horrible. Just say something like, oh, that sounds awful. And don't say anything else, and let them go again. Oh, it was so bad. Do you ever have that traffic over here? Wow, that must have really delayed you today. Yeah, and you know what happened last week? I don't guarantee it's a small word. If you go around three times with this, you're going to see a shift, and that person's going to be like, all right, I was heard. Like we talked about being seen, make their experience brilliant. Just so many people are like, I don't have time for this. We need to, yes, I get it. That whole thing will take you 5 minutes and you can transform their experience, especially between seasons. People are tired. Just listen to them for a little bit. And I promise you it will, yeah. And you get really good at empathy. So I just wanted to add that.
That's perfect. And now that you have the microphone, we're gonna start on workplace systems and culture. So policies matter, but culture matters more. How do you close the gap between what an employee handbook says and what employees experience day to day? So we'll start with you, Jill.
I love this question. So at Expedition HR, when we help clients with handbooks, we call it culture words and culture actions. So your culture is whatever. If you don't act in the ways that reflect your culture is going to be how you act. So you can say, oh, we're a culture of this. And then if you do things that are counter that. So when it comes to your handbook and your policies, we talk about culture words. For instance, an organization that works with, as many people call, homeless population in Salt Lake, they don't call them homeless, they call them vulnerable populations. That's a culture word. And so make sure that when you're talking, you have policies, make sure you're not like in this legal jargon. You're talking like you talk to people. You know, you can protect yourself even if you're not getting into this legal jargon that no one understands. So use words that you use in your policies. And was there a hand up or just a niche? Okay, that's all I have to say. Oh, last thing, sorry, is kind of to put a pin in that is, you want what I call a lack of daylight between what you say and what you do. It's like picture those shades. The daylight coming through is a disconnect between like your culture and what you're saying you are. So if you remember a phrase like try and get a lack of daylight, and you're gonna know right away when there's daylight coming through your culture words and your culture actions.
So this is going to be very non-HR, but who reads the handbook?
Right? I can tell you who doesn't.
Right? You know, back in the olden days when I worked for, especially when I worked for Marriott, big companies, right? We handed them a stack like this thick, right? And we just said, keep signing, and no, you missed one, and you have to go back over there. And then that was the last time that people will look at a handbook, right? So I agree with Jill here. What you do every single day is what matters. And you're always on stage as a leader. But I always tell team members when I talk to them in our orientation in the Stein way, be that person that everybody wants to come to work with. Because we used to call it Debbie Downers. I think we call them Karens now, right? That person, I know I'm aging myself. But I truly believe that people wake up every day wanting to be the best version of themselves. And so culture comes from within. It gets created. It's everything we're talking about today. Collaboration, teamwork, empathy. We call it genuine care. Brilliance is genuine care in the Forbes world, right? Is really bring yourself. And I think that really does bridge the gap between what a handbook says and who you really are.
And I mean, there's not much that I can add to this, really beautifully said. I'm gonna quote Jim Knight. He's a keynote speaker. If you haven't heard of him, definitely look him up. So he said, and that's actually a Chinese proverb. I don't think it was from him. I think it was a Chinese proverb. The best time to plant a tree was 100 years ago, but the second best time is today. And the handbook, it tells people what to expect, but the culture, it tells them whether they can trust you. But what is the culture? And I find that a lot of times people confuse heritage and culture in the workplace. Heritage is, okay, we've always done it this way. Well, this is our heritage. But the culture is ever changing. Literally every time someone new comes to the company, the culture that you had yesterday is maybe 1% less so than what it was yesterday. So yes, I find that the policies, compliance, they do keep changing things with compliance. Every 6 months, there's a new law. We try to keep up with them, but they really do help guide the journey. However, the culture, and also being able to adapt as new people come in, being able to adapt and being consistent with how we treat these people and we continuously meet them where they are. I find that that's where we kind of like bridge the gap between the employee handbook and the culture. The employee handbook tells them what to expect, and the culture that we have, it just tells them if they can trust it or not. Because like you girl said, nobody is really reading the handbook. But when we are living up to our core values in every single decision that we make at the Christian Center, our core values are servant's heart, teamwork, respect, integrity. So in every decision, is everyone really living up to all of those? So how do we follow the handbook? Is by living up to the core value, which in turn turns into the culture that we create in the workplace.
No. So just talking about how to operationalize this, I think if you're looking at your own employee handbook, we went from a 250 plus page employee manual to about 47 pages. So keep it short. No one's gonna read it. If they need to find something, they can find it in 47 pages. 300's a little cumbersome. Have fun with it, but also know you will never, ever out-policy the human spirit. There will be a way. They will find something you did not think about. Yeah, I'm like, story set break.
Can I add something? One really cool thing that we did at the Christian Center, so when I joined a couple of years ago, we actually, so our handbook was about 80 pages, and so the Human Resources Department, which is just myself. I made the executive decision to change it to 34 pages, but people still didn't read it. So last year, I introduced a two-page frequently asked questions with links to policies. And if people are reading the paper version, well, now they're encouraged to go to a computer. But most people read it from their phone. So that's something that's been working for our company. So people just go to the two-page frequently asked questions. Sometimes they will have questions that are not part of that. I don't have all the questions, but frequently asked questions are in there, and that's been really, really helpful. How many PTO hours do I have? How do I request paid time off? If I have to go away for 2 months, do I lose my job? I have to have a surgery. Can I be sure that I'm not gonna lose my job? Am I not gonna get fired? What kind of options do I have? And that's an opportunity for us to inform them of different types of leave options. Not everyone is eligible for family, medical, and leave. However, there are other types of leave options. So it's really always a good conversation. I find that these are the type of questions that I get the most, which is probably related to work-life balance. People really wanted to take time off of work. But yeah, most of the frequently asked questions are tied to time off.
So I want to clarify too, if you have a handbook that they want to read, and I created one that is that, and it has transformed many workplaces. So do you know, you don't have to have a handbook. I think some people are like, it's the law. The law is that you have to make sure your employees know what laws apply to them. So the easy button is have a handbook, which makes a ton of sense. And kind of like we've all been saying, the reality is most handbooks people don't read. And I was on a mission to say, I want to make a handbook, and my handbook is hilarious. It'll make you laugh. It's silly, and a lawyer's gonna hate it, and I don't care. But in HR 25 years, it's gonna protect you because it's people wanna read it, and when they read it, they understand what you're all about. So I always believe if you put a little humor and make it a little bit like, oh, I kinda wanna look at that. And there's gotta be some of the verbiage that's like, oh, when you're eligible for this. I think there's a way to bridge the gap, and I love what everyone says about shortening it, and there's such great ways to have your team be engaged in what you want them to adhere to.
Yeah, I think something that's really useful is separating policies from your handbook. So your handbook does have a lot of the legal pieces, but if every time you change a policy, let's say, I don't know how many iterations of hybrid work environment we went through, we finally have settled on one. If I change it in the handbook every time, I have to get everyone to represent the handbook and then get them to re-sign it because in that case. So I extracted a lot of things like that, credit card policies, those. So they're separate. So if they get updated, that's the only thing you have to do. And I heard this, I think it's brilliant, but culture is not about what you tolerate, or it's not about what is it? Culture is about... not about what you don't tolerate, it's what you tolerate. Is that right, Jen? Yeah, I think that's the one. But anyway, so it's not about like what you shouldn't be doing, it's about like what we tolerate and allow you to do. That really can force the culture more so than your handbook. All right, anyone would like to chime in? Yes.
Thank you guys for being here, and thanks for taking the question. Ashton Edwards, KPCW, nice to meet you all. So we're a nonprofit, and I am not sure who else is, but as a business, as a nonprofit that can't provide housing, and kind of do all of these other things, what creative solutions have you seen in this economy, constantly losing resources, more strain put on everyone, the world, somebody said it earlier, the world is on fire. And I mean, this is just a very challenging time. So I am curious how other places are getting creative with retaining talent, attracting talent, and keeping them from hating their lives and leaving.
I have a quick question. Can you trade, can you do product and trade? Could you, if I was a restaurant and I provided lunch to your employees once a month, could you give me a spot for free?
We have to talk about that. Maybe
That just popped in my head. Like, what are things we do? Okay. Yeah, because we feed people all the time. And that seems to go over well. I mean, signs you feed everyone every day. That was amazing. So food really does bring people together. So I guess if you're willing amongst other companies to barter services, and it seems kind of like a archaic way to do it, but might work.
I can start. I mean, the easy thing to do is to trick them into the perfect job description, and then they find out when they start. Don't do that. No, I mean, a lot of people, though, I've heard that. Hey, this is not what I thought I would be doing. I've heard that many times, but I find that transparency with the job descriptions, it definitely helps with retention, because if you do not know what it is that you're getting into, it makes it much harder, not only for you to be bought in, but to truly have that impact that you were hoping to have with the company or organization. And earlier you were talking about, Sarah, some of the initiatives that you have to truly retain or keep seasonal employers coming back. I find that at the Christian Center of Park City and everywhere else that I've worked is that continuous investment in the person. Because when people feel like they are cared for as an individual, and this one's going to be easy for me to say, because our mission is to meet people at their point of need. So I can always say, well, I try to meet my employees at their point of need. And I find that if we as employers, we really try to see the person behind the performer, it's a lot easier to retain talent, because a lot of times people are just one conversation away from accepting another opportunity. And at times people also, they choose to stay with you even though you're not able to compete with maybe a certain pay that they have, as long as, I guess, their lifestyle allows them to stay with you. People will stay with you if you treat them right, just like any relationship, marriage, parents, any relationship that we have. We want to stick with people who make us feel good, who can relate to us. And I find that for one of the ways that we try to retain talent is not by only treating them right, but also we, psychology teaches us that we have traits, stable traits, and we also have stress phases. And this statistic is totally wrong, but for the sake of this example, I will say 2% of my personality is what I show when I am stressed. And maybe that is the same for a lot of people. Some people is 5%. Sometimes I'm 10%. I'm not perfect. But anyway, what I will say is do not allow the 2 or 5 or 10% of the person that you see going through a hard time dictate how you treat the other 98-95% of them. Always treat people according to who they are, but not necessarily how they behave in certain set of circumstances. And if you're loyal to them, they will be loyal to you if you're willing to work with them and meet them where they are.